Being a king, that's exhausting. So much as being human is, Fia said. It's certainly a lot of work, worrying about castle security. I kind of miss the road.
I miss the Earl's Tower, believe it or not, Argabella said with a sigh. Not so much the thorns and people who seem dead all the time, but the roses and the peace.
Yes, that's exactly what I want, Fia said. Roses and peace.
Life isn't peaceful, Grinda said. Anyone who tells you otherwise is trying to sell you an overpriced mattress.
Wait! Gustav stood and slammed his hands on the table. I forgot! The main edict! I want Staff the Pixie brought before me. She started this mess, and although Looker has been punished, she's just running around screwing up the lives of innocent goats and poo-boys.
He walked to the window, and although he was successful, it was by no means a graceful walk. Throwing open the shutters, he shouted to the street below.
Do you hear that song, Glenn? I will reward whoever brings me Staff the Pixie with 3 old boots.
When he turned and saw the horrified expressions of his friends, he added,
Okay, 4 old boots, but really nice ones.
Grinda waddled up behind him and whispered,
Try 5 gold pieces. Most people aren't moved to action by used footwear.
Yes, thank you, Chamberlain, he shouted out the window. Plus 5 gold pieces!
Grinda found it quite satisfying how the populace outside scrambled to oblige, turning over rocks and opening doors, hoping to find the wayward pixie. But it took several days before Gustav's demand proved fruitful. They were accustomed now to allowing the castle to run itself, and most visitors never made it past the front door thanks to the stern demeanor of the king's new halfling butler, a cousin of Milieu Gubersnooch, named Mondu Gubersnooch III. But this time the bell rang, and they all hurried down to the throne room to see what kind of mastermind could scoot past a Gubersnooch. Gustav took his seat and arranged his cloak of brown velvet.
You may address me,
he said to the elegantly attired elf waiting on the royal carpet. This elf looked ever so slightly different from the elves of the Morningwood, with a wild air about him and his hair cut short and slicked back. He wore a blazer and carried a briefcase, and as soon as the king addressed him, he bowed and began his spiel.
Good King Gustav, and I don't know why they call you that, because me, I would call you Great Great King Gustav, or better yet, Best King Gustav. Can't get better than this, can you, King Gustav?
No.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Best King Gustav, I heard you were looking for Staff the Pixie, and let's say I was able to get my hands on her. Who do you think you'd pay for that?
The king has put the price of 5 gold pieces on the enemy of the crown known as Staff the Pixie.
Grinda broke in sharply.
And a great number that is, too.
The elf agreed.
5 is just a super number. But what if that number was 10? Wouldn't it be worth it to you, King Gustav, to never have to worry about Staff the Pixie again?
Gustav leaned over to where Fia stood at attention in a full suit of armor with his golden goat sigil emblazoned on the cuirass.
Can you threaten this guy and get it over with?
He asked.
Unless your thirsty sword is extra thirsty, and then maybe we shouldn't let it loose.
It's gone, she whispered back. I had lead poured over it and threw it in the lake.
I've been wondering about that,
Argabella said.
Isn't lead supposed to be kind of poisonous? And if so, maybe we shouldn't have put any in a lake full of fish.
Oh, no! It's still killing!
Fia wailed.
Quiet!
Grinda hissed.
We're in public.
The elf was still prattling on about numbers and return on investment and the cost of retaining a caught pixie as compared to finding a new pixie, and although Grinda knew she was being upsold and was somehow under the sinister influence of elf magic, she was nearly prepared to acquiesce and give this hard-working elf spellsman the 15 gold pieces he deserved for being a superior entrepreneur. But Gustav shouted,
Show me the pixie and then we'll talk.
The elf grinned with a creepy amount of teeth and unbuckled his briefcase, which popped open to reveal a small cage containing none other than Staff the Pixie. Grinda's possum tail immediately tightened on her wand, and she nearly blasted the meddling fairy into oblivion, until she recognized that the cage was crafted from Titania's 2-toe titanium and thus immune to magic spells. That explained how the elf was able to contain someone as powerful as Staff. As for the pixie herself, she sprawled on the floor of the cage in a fugue of liquor fumes, her red pants covered in foul stains, and her nose hairs curling gently with each exhalation.
"Are you sure it's her?" Gustav asked. "The pixie I remember had one blue sock, and this pixie is wearing a hideous pair of mismatched galoshes."
At that, Staff stirred and sat up, rubbing warty fists into her bleary red eyes. When she looked around and saw Gustav, she did a comical double-take and shrugged.
"That's right," the pixie said. "I'm not the one you want. This stank face not a kidnapped me while I was helping save a bunch of orphans from a troll. I'm innocent. This is an outrage. My good friend Looker can sort this out."
She peered around the throne room.
"Looker! Our buddy, old pal!"
"He's dead,"
Grinda hissed, waddling towards Staff with all her bristly gray fur standing on end and her lips pulled back over her teeth.
"And soon's you will be too."
Staff stood and felt all over her body for a wand, a series of actions that made everyone else wince.
"Where is it? Who took my wand?"
The elf, who had been watching the interchange with a pleased smile, held out a wand by the tips of his fingers and waggled it just out of Staff's reach. Grinda couldn't blame him for not wanting to touch it. Part of the pixie's magic derived from her mucus, and the wand was moist and gobbeted with boogers.
"So now that we've established that this is Staff the Pixie and that you, the king, have requested Staff the Pixie, let's talk about payment plans,
The elf pulled out a sheaf of parchment as tall as half a halfling.
"Now that we've mutually agreed on 50 gold pieces, if you'll just sign here."
Grinda nodded and reached for the quill he held out.
"Yes, that sounds very reasonable."
"No!"
Gustav shouted, startling everyone.
"I don't know why you're all suddenly stupid, but this nincompoop is trying to swindle me, and as the king, I don't like that one bit. Guards, take him in hand. Bring me that cage and give the elf 5 boots or 5 gold pieces, his choice, and kick him out. And for the love of all that's goaty, put up a no soliciting sign. Whenever he opens his mouth, I feel a part of me die."
Grinda shook herself, feeling the elf's spell partially broken and realizing that Gustav was immune to the charm the elf had used to ensnare her. What they needed was some hearing-impaired guards mixed in with the rest to protect them from spoken spells and rival bardic spells in the future. Before the elf could talk again, she flicked her wand and shouted,
"Sweeze!"
The elf's mouth kept moving, but no sound came out. The phrases he shouted would have shocked anyone with the ability to read lips, and his hand gestures made his feelings clear to those without that skill. Gustav's guards moved in, taking the elf in hand, and one guard brought the cage to Gustav as the pixie beat herself against the bars, trying to squeeze through and failing.
"You started all this,"
Gustav marveled, staring at the nasty little creature.
"If not for you, I'd probably be stew by now. And poorly seasoned, too, judging by the sorry herb garden Worsley's mother kept, so thanks a lot for that. Both for real and sarcastically. Now, I'm not really in favor of anyone's execution."
"What?"
Grinda sputtered.
"But I can't set you free, either. You've caused too much trouble, and I can't have you flying around activating all sorts of chosen ones to come after me. What next, a talking shark? Just no."
He turned to Grinda.
"Any non-lethal suggestions, Chamberlain? I have a strict no-slaughter policy for captives."
"You'll have to open the cage first. The metal is ensorcelled. And then cut off her wings,"
Grinda said.
"That will nullify her magic. Sense of feeling kind."
King Gustav motioned Fia over.
"Get your sword ready."
"No," Staff shrieked. "Don't you dare!"
"On three,"
Gustav said, holding the clasp on the cage. Grinda grinned in anticipation, anxious to see her old foe rendered helpless.
"One."
Fia's sword was ready.
"Two."
Arcabella closed her eyes.
"Three."
Gustav opened the cage, and Fia reached inside, grabbing the pixie by the wings. Staff struggled and shrieked, kicking and screaming as she was tugged through the door. But the moment she was outside, a thunderclap shook the room, filling it with noxious green gas. As the gas cleared, Fia called out in dismay. The pixie had disappeared. 30. outside a door, hung with gnarly knockers. Argabella choked on fairy gas and experienced a profound sense of incompletion. They'd come so far, and staff had escaped. Even worse, Fia would blame herself for letting the pixie go, even though it wasn't her fault.
"I should have known,"
Grinda said, examining the cage with her tiny possum hands.
"Her wand wasn't her only source of power. Witches and wizards require an artifact to focus our magic, but pixies are fairies, and fairies have their own sort of filthy, disgusting magic they can let rip, so to speak."
Beside her, the elf jumped up and down, shouting silently and pointing at his hand as if requesting the gold he'd come to claim. Argabella thought he looked more than a little ridiculous. It was funny how she'd once thought elves to be gracious, cultured, magical beings, but had learned that they were all complete toe rags.
"Drop him outside,"
Grinda instructed the guards. As they dragged him out, she shouted,
"Gold is for closers!"
"But he brought me Staff the Pixie, so don't I owe him 5 gold pieces?
Gustav asked, confused.
"I mean, even if she got away by deploying a magical fart, he still did his job."
"So, you're going to be that kind of king?"
Grinda smoothed down her fur and sighed yet again before shouting after the guards.
"Fine. Give him 5 gold pieces and tell him never to come back here again."
She turned to Gustav.
"You're setting a dangerous precedent with that, you know. If the people think you can be trusted, they'll start asking for things. Living wages, clean water, proper health care."
"Oh. But that sounds pretty reasonable, doesn't it? I mean, they're paying taxes, right?"
Grinda threw her possum hands in the air and sounded vexed, but Argabella saw her smiling a wee possum smile out of Gustav's vision. The witch was secretly pleased.
"Benevolence. It had to be benevolence. You're never going to make it as king with a soft heart like that."
"I'm kind of worried about it, actually," Gustav admitted. "I mean, what am I going to do when you're gone? I don't really trust anyone but you guys. I still feel like most people want to eat me. Even Hurlga sometimes looks at me like I'm made of meat."
"You are still made of meat,"
Argabella said gently.
"I know, and it's terrifying."
Grinda scampered up the throne and sat on the arm, patting Gustav's shoulder.
"Being king is like being anything. At first it's scary, but then you get the hang of it. And then it gets boring and you want to spend a year on a boat finding yourself. For now you're still in the scary bit. But you have Hurlga and your guards, and a bunch of cooks and maids and—"
"Please stay."
Poor Gustav. As a goat, he could simply faint when he was frightened, but as a human, he had no choice but to hunch down in his throne and tremble. He looked around, meeting the eyes of each of his friends. Argabella found it a little disconcerting, considering it didn't quite feel like both of his eyes were meeting hers. But she read the desperation there, and felt terribly bad for him.
"What did you say?"
Grinda asked.
"Stay. Please. All of you. I've grown so accustomed to you. I'm a herd animal at heart, and, well, you're my herd. Beatrix and the nanny goats are still mad at me for tricking them and putting Blurt to sleep."
Argabella went to his other side and scratched behind his ear the way he liked, and Fia came up and put her arm around Argabella's waist.
"But there's still work to do,"
Argabella said gently.
"My old castle is still enchanted, as am I,"
she thought, but didn't say.
"And Worstly might still be saved," Fia added, "which I'd really like to do."
"And I'd like to not be a marsupial,"
Grinda said, one little pink hand going unconsciously to her pouch. Gustav made a strangled bleat, and she graciously added,
"But I will come back to act as your advisor once my business is done, if you wish."
Gustav sighed in relief.
"Yes, please. Advise me. I'm starting to get the hang of forks, but I'm still clueless about how I'm supposed to rule. This nanny goat I was talking to said everyone's saying I'm screwing it up on purpose. That nobility aren't supposed to care about the people they've been entrusted to lead. I mean, what else am I supposed to do with taxes? Hoard them? Sheesh!"
"That can wait until I return. Mondu will help you with the day-to-day business in the meantime,"
Grinda promised.
"And Hurlga, of course, will help you with,
Her eyes dropped to his diaper before she added,
"your other business. It'll only be a few weeks if you lend us a coach, and then we can start cleaning up this mess of a kingdom.
What a strange idea, Gustav said with a grin. Me, cleaning something up.
They set out the next morning in the king's most luxurious coach. Gustav had given them many gifts, although he hadn't quite mastered gift-giving yet on a human scale. They had a large bale of hay, 5 boots, several shoelaces, and a bouquet of thistles. Thankfully, Mondu knew his way around a treasury, and he made sure they were truly well-fortified for their journey. Argabella had a beautiful new lute carved of morningwood birch and ensorcelled to always be in tune. Fia's fine new helmet was fitted with an enormous pair of carved wood goat horns to mark her as a member of Gustav's elite guard. Grinda had a bucket of wet cat food and a pashmina shawl to nest in. Together, they settled into the cushy seats and prepared to see the land in a new way. Comfortably. They were so accustomed to traveling as a party that there was little strife. They encountered neither trolls nor giants, and their horses had more sense than their old oxen. 4 of the king's guards traveled with them, ensuring they were unmolested. Grinda kept a small notebook and made a list of which roads required attention, and they stopped in each town to take note of the general attitude surrounding happiness, government, and goats. Argabella had once thought Grinda to be very selfish and somewhat cruel, but it seemed like having a purpose suited the witch. Perhaps that was the way of people. They just needed to matter. And it was hard to be relevant when all one did was sit on fantastic beaches surrounded by sparkling crabs.
"Why do you like those shiny crabs so much?" Argabella asked, pointing to the ring glittering on Grinda's tail.
"They are tough and beautiful, whether you are there to notice them or not. They're like people that way. For example, those years you spent in the tower due to this awful curse, nobody saw you. And still you were tough and beautiful."
"What? No,"
Argabella began, surprised that this was suddenly about her.
"Ask Fia."
She blushed furiously and slid her eyes to Fia, who grinned at her from inside her helmet.
"You were, honey bunny."
"Anyway, they remind me of what I'm working for. The unseen people, folks from Kuhl and Tibring and Bordel on the Skyre, the denizens of the eastern provinces, the dwarfs and elves, and the giants, too. They're just like you and me, except they're out of common sight. Well, except perhaps the giants are a little more cannibalistic than we are. Still, working for them is working for myself."
They rolled up to the thorny tower one afternoon on a properly sunny day, and Argabella was awed by how mysterious and sublime it looked from the outside. The sunlight slanted through glistening green leaves and beautiful magenta roses, the gray stone underneath forbidding and ancient. To think, for so long she'd been inside, letting the world pass by, and all because of one foul pixie, everything had changed. She didn't feel ashamed of her soft rabbit fur and long ears now. When she saw the way Fia looked at her, she was simply glad to exist at all. The carriage jingled to a stop, and Argabella held the door open for Grinda. The sandwich clambered out and waddled up and down the base of the thorn-covered wall.
"Where is it?"
she muttered.
"Ah, sir."
She aimed her wand at a section of the wily thatch and thrust it forward, penetrating so deeply that the wand all but disappeared. The thorns rustled and shivered in response and then shuddered apart to reveal a wooden door with 2 gnarly old knockers hanging on it, somewhat higher than a halfling's reach. Fia groaned.
"You've got to be kidding me. I climbed up a hank of nasty hair and killed a kid, and there was a door here all along?"
Grinda raised a whiskery eyebrow.
"There's almost always a way in. You just have to know where to look. Or, you know, to have seen it originally before you hit it. I can't reach them, Fia, so I want you to grab hold of those knockers and twist them."
Fia did so, and the door sighed and moaned as it swung open on the courtyard, a place Argabella knew well. When she saw Oxnard the guard, still asleep with his face buried in cherry pie, and then looked to the lady's tower, she felt a thrum of guilt. As if sensing her feelings, Fia slid a hand into hers.
"It's going to be fine," she said,
and Argabella believed her.
"Now show me your dead poo boy."
Grinda stopped, mouth open, in shock at herself.
"I mean, my dear nephew Worstly, my goodness, how that goat gets under one's skin."
"Don't you want to wake up the castle first?"
Argabella urged.
No, let's do this first, trust me. You don't want someone to wake up next to a dead body.
Fia led them to the tower and held Argabella's hand all the way up the steps. The Lady Harkavrita still lay in her bed, beautiful, if a little creepy, her beard lustrous and shining, but worstly was...
Oh, goodness. My darlings, yes, he's dead. Really, really dead. Way beyond my powers, beyond anybody's powers.
Grinda pronounced, tears slipping down her silver cheeks. Argabella turned away and vomited carrots, and Fia silently wept. Although Argabella had seen many corpses recently and had almost become one herself on several occasions, she hadn't yet seen someone so supremely dead as Worsley. And she felt horrible for Fia, who had fought past trolls and hook tongues and soldiers and so much more in the hope that he might be saved. The tower's magic had done nothing to halt his deadfulness, and he was, in fact, in an advanced state of decay.
"What do we do with it? I mean, him?"
Argabella asked, wiping sour juice from her lips. Grinda was panting, her little beady eyes bugging out.
"Wrap him in something, and stow him in that wardrobe over there. There will soon be brawnier people about to dig the grave, and we have business to attend to."
Fia's mouth gaped.
"But isn't he your nephew?"
"We weren't close,"
Grinda said.
"I am sorry he's gone, and very sorry for my sister's grief. It was a senseless tragedy, and the blame for it rests squarely on the shoulders of Looker and staff. You should bear no guilt for this. Now, let's all move past it and do some good in the world."
She had that firm resolve that comes from a life of tragedy, and Argabella and Fia immediately set to rolling what was left of Worsley up inside what they now recognized as a priceless tapestry from Michelangelo's Blue Period. After visiting the washroom to clean up, Argabella strode out of the tower, gulped fresh air, and sucked in the scent of roses. She needed a break after that harrowing sight. Although she didn't think it would be quite as easy for Fia to move on from the crushing disappointment of Worsley's confirmed death, she felt a lift of hope as Grinda called her inside the castle to where the heart rose waited. Standing before it, she remembered the moment she'd first seen Fia and begged her not to hurt the leggy cultivar with its crumpled heart. But the possum had no such scruples about the tender flower.
"Fia, lift me out to the blossom, please," she said. "There's only one way to break this enchantment."
Fia obligingly picked Grinda up, and the possum stretched out her neck, snapping up the rose blossom in three quick bites. Once the last petal was swallowed, the thorns fell away from every surface of the castle walls and turned to dust, creating quite a cleanup project in the process. Argabella didn't get to witness the castle waking up, however, as she was engulfed in a golden whirlwind of light and glitter. Her body lifted up in the center of a powerful vortex, and she went warm all over, as if bathing in the summer sun. Spinning around, blinded by incandescent light, she could hear Fia shouting,
"Hold on, love, I'm here!"
But then the warmth and light tore away from her as if someone had blown out the only candle in her bedroom and snatched away her blanket. Argabella shivered in the dark and cold and painfully banged her knees on the floor as she fell, seized by an epic fit of sneezing as the dust from all the enchanted thorns had been blown about in her own personal tornado. A hand landed on her shoulder.
"Are you okay?"
Fia asked between her own sneezes.
I think so."
But when she looked up, Fia gasped and touched her cheek.
"What is it? Am I a worse monster? Am I a goat or a marmoset? What happened?"
Argabella wailed, but Fia just helped her stand and turned her to face a mirror. Argabella was human again. The fur and whiskers and long ears were gone, and when she reached around behind her, her fluffy tail was gone too, leaving an awkward hole in her gown. She had never thought herself particularly pretty, yet she suddenly felt like herself, more like herself than she'd ever herselfed.
Do I look okay?"
she asked Fia, because she was terrified that Fia might not like this version of who she was.
"You're still perfect,"
the fighter said, pulling her in for a kiss. All around them, her friends and fellow castle denizens were waking up, shaking their heads in disbelief and yawning, and then fighting over privies. Argabella didn't really care. She only had eyes for Fia. The The next hour was a rush of questions and answers, and they carefully steered clear of the Earl and Countess and Argabella's pushy father to avoid any possible interrogation. Not that the gentry would know what questions to ask any better than the others. Mostly everyone asked everyone else what happened, to which Argabella replied,
"I don't know, but aren't you glad to be awake and alive?"
What the castle denizens didn't know wouldn't hurt them, or make them attack the sandwich, who Argabella believed was going to do real good in the kingdom by Gustav's side. They were attempting to edge toward the tower to check on Lady Harkavrita when a screech rang out from the top.
"The lady is dead!"
someone shouted. Hurrying up the stairs, they found a maid standing over the Lady Harkavrita, who lay still and waxy on her bed. She wasn't awake, but she was definitely breathing, Argabella noticed with great relief.
"She's not dead," she told the girl. "But she's not moving and the smell is so bad. Somebody vomited carrots in here." "That was the possum," Argabella said.
Grinda hissed, but Argabella's eyes flitted to the closet.
"You should probably go fetch a physician."
"This is highly abnormal,"
Grinda whispered after the frantic woman ran out the door wailing.
"The spell is broken. She should be awake. I mean, I'm glad she's not dead, but she shouldn't be half dead. This is not how the spell was supposed to work. I really do need my library."
She held up a teeny possum hand to the light.
"This form grows tiresome. I must return to my beach house to investigate. Will you two be fine if I take the coach?"
Argabella looked at Fia, and Fia looked at Argabella.
"We don't mind walking,"
Argabella said.
"You know, I was thinking."
Fia smiled at Argabella like she was the most beautiful thing in the world.
"Now that the hot rose is gone, I remember you saying Lord Toby had lovely roses. I might have even spied a few on my visit there."
"He does,"
Argabella said.
"I mean, he did, when he was alive. I suspect the roses are still there, but they'll need tending, pruning, mulching, that sort of thing. Can't have them getting leggy."
"And I know he would want someone to keep his tower properly landscaped. He was the sort of fellow who would hate to think of his domain gone amok."
"He would probably appreciate it if two kind souls took over his rose gardens and kept his chickens in check. And we know a guy who could grant us proper title to that land."
Fia grinned at her.
"We should depart forthwith and enjoy the flowers in bloom."
"We should."
Grinda growled to get their attention, as they were just gazing into each other's eyes like complete ninnies as they murmured about roses and peace.
"Well, you two darlings seem to have a plan. I'll see you at King Gustav's birthday party next month, I suppose. Hopefully I'll have proper hands by then. Oh, and don't even think of getting him a boot. I already got him one."
The possum sandwich left with the usual curtness that poorly hid her feelings, and Argabella and Fia wandered back down to the courtyard as everyone else rushed up the tower steps to fret over the sleeping lady. They were serene amidst the pandemonium. As they approached the door to leave, Argabella watched Oxnard the guard finally finish eating his cherry pie, look up, and exclaim,
"Oi! Where's my crossbow?"
They managed to just barely contain their mirth until they exited, when their eyes met and they both burst out laughing. Everyone lived happily ever after. Or at least until King Gustav's birthday. Except for the dead people, who remained dead. And for the sleeping lady, who kept on sleeping. Epilogue. At a party, afflicted with unacceptable ghost cake. King Gustav received many, many old boots for his birthday, which his human dentition and digestive system could no longer tolerate, but which were very much appreciated by Beatrix and the nanny goats, and his regifting of said boots went a long way toward repairing the rift between them. He had already given Blurt a fresh jar of pickled herring and a new bed to nap in after eating it. In the same dining hall where Gustav had once urinated into a bowl of lima beans, the now diaperless monarch reveled in a fine birthday feast with his friends. Grinda was there, triumphantly returned to her human form, and efficiently organizing the dissemination of Gustav's policies, while dealing ruthlessly and quietly with threats to his throne. He had successfully negotiated the end of the giant strike with the bone donor ploy, and was thinking something similar might tempt Olfactory to work in exchange for food and make much of Grunting habitable again. He had also made immediate improvements to the postal service, and when people remarked upon it, the postal workers were quick to credit King Gustav's canny mind. Not all of his initiatives were soaring, but these early successes were doing much to discourage challenges to his rule, and Grinda could deal with what little resistance she'd seen. Fia and Argabella were there for the party, too, having come from a victorious visit to the Pelsmell's Rose Show. Once they promised to spend at least part of the year in Songlin in service to the crown, Gustav immediately granted them title to Toby's Tower at Malefic Reach. That way they could continue to employ old Dementria and Poltro's brother Morvin while enjoying their peace and roses. King Gustav was all about caring for the Pooh-boys of the world. As the party progressed, they raised glasses and flagons of elvish mead to the dear memories of both Lord Toby and Poltro. And then the cake was brought out, a magnificently flaming baked meringue cake in the shape of a leather boot, its innards filled with delicious vegan custard that set their mouths to watering. Argabella volunteered to slice the cake and serve everyone, and she sang a tiny happy cake tune while she distributed the treat.
Cake is good, cake is fine, I'd eat cake all the time if I could, because cake is good, and so is King Gustav, knock on wood.
Something blue and ethereal slid over the frosted expanse of the cake as she sang, and it took Argabella a moment to realize that it was a pair of feet. And when she looked up, she recognized that the owner of said feet was a vaporous and glowing Lord Toby, who said,
"Wow, that looks pretty scrumptious."
"What? Toby? Is anyone else seeing this?"
Judging by the exclamations of surprise, they all were. And then Poltro appeared next to him, similarly limned in blue.
"Were any chickens harmed in the making of this cake?"
the ghostly form asked.
"Please say yes."
The ghosts were immediately peppered with a barrage of questions.
"How are you here?
How did you die, Poltro?"
"Is this what happens after you die? You crash birthday parties?"
"Forget death. Can you even eat cake now?"
Lord Toby held up his hands for silence.
"We merely heard your kind toast to our memories and thought it would be nice to visit. We've been quite busy otherwise, you know, haunting the Morningwood for fun. Those horrible cheese thieves have had cause to regret their actions, let me tell you."
Fia asked Poltro about Conan.
"Did he bury your body next to Lord Toby?"
"Oh, yes, he did.
Very polite and respectful of my bones he was. Then, because for a bit I was attached to him and Lord Toby was attached to me, we followed him here to Songlin, where he spent a week in testy times asking everyone if they'd seen a girl who looked kind of like a rabbit, and he was feeling pretty testy and blue by the end of it."
"I'm glad I don't look like that anymore,"
Argabella said.
"Lord Toby, did you take any revenge on Bigelow?"
"It proved not to be necessary. Indeed, I couldn't," he cried, dramatically clutching a fist in the air. "Fate dealt with him first. The very troll for whom Belladonna had prepared that bog frog smoothie wound up eating him somewhere near the Grange."
The two ghosts were welcomed by all after that, even by King Gustav, who was fairly certain the ghosts could not make curry out of him now.
"This is all very merry, my lord," Poltro said. "But I'm thinking it's probably time you got around to asking him that thing, you know."
"Ask us what?" Grinda wondered aloud.
"Well, you know what would go perfectly with this cake?"
Toby asked.
"What?"
"Some flesh, honey."
Argabella promptly vomited her entire meal on top of the king's birthday cake, and there was much wailing and gnashing of teeth. But then Lord Toby pressed his case.
"Seriously, I think just a dollop or two of that precious substance upon our bodies might serve to give me and Poltro another shot at living. And you know where to get some."
"Nonsense," Grinda said.
"That stuff extends life. It doesn't resurrect it."
Well, how would you know? Toby demanded. Have you ever tried what I suggest?
No, but... Recall, if you will, who originally bred the necrobees, the dread necromancer Steve.
Ah! I hate Steve! Fia cried.
The door to the dining room burst open, and the friends were instantly on guard, even as the specters of Lord Toby and Poltro winked out of sight. It was a postman, looking sharp and crisp in a new Pelican post uniform. He held aloft a wax-sealed envelope.
Majesty, a message from Lord Urgot in Brooding. It's the first one sent at the new super big way huge mega important rate.
Brooding? Gustav looked at Grinda. Is that in Borix?
It is, and I recognize that name.
Grinda's expression was dark and smeared, but her power suit was impeccable.
I think I do, too. Wasn't he the guy who stabbed my Pooh Boy's older brother in the heart?
Yes. He killed my nephew Bestly.
Huh. Might be time to find a new Lord of Brooding. Well, let's see what he wants.
He took the letter from the postman and dismissed him, then promptly handed over the missive to Grinda since he still had problems fiddling with paper, because paper cuts are terrible. The sandwich tore open the envelope, fished out the letter, noted the date, and read aloud.
My dear good King Gustav, my best congratulations on your recent kingship. I have always known you would make a fine king, and I am sure you will keep our realm in fine fettle. I wish to assure you that my state of Brooding is likewise in excellent hands and will require little of your most important time. The halflings are fine people and the gnomes are under control. No problems to see here. If, on the other hand, you wouldst require an aide to act as wise advisor in your new role, I wouldst welcome the opportunity for bro times on the town. And I did take care of Borix while the Earl slept, so I know things about keeping order. Do send for me soon. Yours in service, Lord Urgot of Brooding.
The first thing Gustav said was,
What the heck are bro times, and why do they sound so terrible? Are they even legal?
More importantly, why is this lord spending so much gold to tell us there are no problems?
Grinda asked.
I think this matter might require our personal attention.
Yeah? Okay, that's fine with me.
We have to see to the Lady Harkavrita anyway,
the sandwich added.
I have researched some additional remedies that may cure her condition.
And, there's Worstly to think about,
Fia said.
Remember we left his body wrapped up in the lady's wardrobe?
Grinda waved her hand, dismissing it. Don't worry about that. I'm sure the people in the Earl's castle have found him by now and buried him somewhere. His body's just an empty husk of flesh anyway. She looked at the ruined birthday cake and sniffled once, a tear in her eye.
Believe me, my friend, that farm boy is dead.
This is Luke Daniels. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Kill the Farm Boy, The Tales of Pell, by Delilah S. Dawson and Kevin Hearn. This program was directed by Scott Sherp. Executive producer Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2018 by D.S. Dawson and Kevin Hearn. Production copyright 2018 Penguin Random House, LLC.
All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.